Hi, everyone. This is Alien Talk Podcast. This is where we discuss all things about aliens and UFOs, and where we always push the limits of our understanding. We are your dedicated hosts, Joe Landry and Nori Ulford, here again to bring you a fascinating show out across the World Wide Web as we explore the many manifold topics surrounding the idea of extraterrestrial life and the mystery of UFO encounters and the studies of other paranormal occurrences. So it's great to be here with all of you. And Lori, welcome back from your Mexican Riviera cruise. I'm sure you and your wife had a great time getting away for a while.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. We really did have a nice time. Those cruisers are just incredible. So much food, I tell you. I mean, you're just constantly eating. And I know I must have put on about 5 pounds at least.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's food from gourmet chefs who are probably the best in the world. I know my parents went on one a number of years ago. I think it was with Norwegian Cruise Lines. And Jacques Pepin was on board as the executive chef. And he's like renowned and has all kinds of culinary awards. So, yeah, no doubt. You definitely eat well on those ships. you know, my wife and I sailed on a princess cruise to the Pacific Northwest back in 2019, and it was great. There are just no words for how good the food was. But anyway, we're glad to have you back.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's good to be back. Our previous episode on the Vatican Archives has been going over really well. You notice we broke the all-time record with a surge of downloads in the first 7 days. So we're glad to see that you guys out there enjoyed that one so much. And as always, thanks for tuning in and supporting us the way you do. So today we're going to get into something that is a little more tied in with current affairs surrounding the UFO stories. Now, unless you've been living under a rock these past couple of years, you know very well that the subject has gained quite a bit of media attention. And there have even been congressional hearings about the matter, which makes us think that something strange and otherworldly may be afoot here. So this is why we want to focus our attention on the recent sightings of the UAPs and examine how vulnerable our airspace is to alien spacecraft entering it without being detected, or at least not being detected quickly enough before they, well, you know, get here and do whatever it is that they intend to do.
Yeah, and I think the question of that vulnerability became forefront just about a month ago. On February 10th, 11th, and 12th, the U.S. and Canadian military shot down four things over North America. Well, three things that were called unidentified objects, at least one of them octagonal in shape. Now, of course, this immediately led to a whole lot of speculation that these were extraterrestrial objects, since the Biden administration said that they weren't from one of our adversaries. However, in the White House press briefings that followed, the questions about them being extraterrestrial in origin were unequivocally denied as such. So it's important to realize that these three unidentified objects were shot down only about a week after that Chinese spy balloon was destroyed off the coast of South Carolina after it had crossed over the continental United States. So we've talked before about how since the end of World War II, the government has had serious concerns about our airspace being vulnerable to enemy incursions, to being attacked from the air. And that has pretty much defined the protocol for UFO programs, namely Project Blue Book. And part of that concern was to prevent widespread panic about such a thing happening. And this is why any kind of sighting or crash recovery was kept immediately silent, or else it was explained away as something else, basically harmless, something non-interesting, not noteworthy. And any information about it became classified, and people were told to just go about their business and, you know, not to worry about it.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned the octagonal shaped UFO, because remember in an earlier episode, I mentioned that I saw three octagonal shaped UFOs traveling westbound. It was many years ago, as you know, my daughter and I were hanging up the Christmas lights. And now here's a story mentioning the octagonal shaped UFOs. So, but with what happened this past month with these things they've merely calling unidentified objects, it seems a little different. They're much more cavalier about it. which is strange to me. So whatever was shot down after the Chinese spy balloon was shot down could very well be pretty insignificant. Otherwise, the military wouldn't tell the public anything. They would be like, no, those were a flock of birds. Nothing was unidentified. It was absolutely nothing at all. In fact, it didn't even happen. So it seems like because it took place right after that spy balloon sailed completely across our country, by the way, that the whole thing was more of a political stunt than anything else. And that's why it was disclosed to the public as a way of saying, yeah, you know, something got in our airspace, but, you know, we took care of it this time.
Right. To me, it seems like Washington doesn't want to make a whole lot of waves with Beijing by throwing out too many accusations. And yet they also want to show the American public and the world, for that matter, that they have a handle on everything that is coming into our airspace. Now, the United States and Canada together do possess very sophisticated tracking and surveillance systems, as well as an array of air defense platforms that cover every part of the North American continent. It's all coordinated and controlled by NORAD, which is North American Aerospace Defense Command, which is a military organization that combines the capabilities of radar, satellite, RF signal analysis, and intelligence gathering of the two countries so as to provide protection against enemy attack. The whole concept goes back to the Cold War era when we were, you know, very concerned about the Soviet nuclear threat. And the idea is that nothing can enter the U.S. or Canadian airspace without it being detected, tracked, interdicted, and if need be, neutralized. And that's the idea anyway. Now, certainly things don't always go perfectly or as the plan, as there are plenty of accounts of objects, some identified and some of them unidentified, of getting in without being detected or with being detected in a delayed time frame. And with an even more delayed response, often ending up with the bogey and not being engaged. Actually, the NORAD operation has come under some criticism from Congress, particularly within the last month, with the Chinese spy balloon and then with, the other unknown objects that were shot down. But also over the past several years, its mission effectiveness, relevance, and adaptability to the changing times, it has been called into question. This was mentioned by Sarah McGuire with E! International Relations. It was dated February 15th, 2015. And there's also some, popular sentiment about the only thing that NORAD is good for is that Santa Claus tracker that they put out every Christmas. now, I wouldn't go as far as to say that. I think they have more relevance and usefulness than that. But, letting that spy balloon traverse the entire continental United States, yeah, it definitely doesn't seem like their finest moment.
Yeah, for sure. So the Chinese spy balloon was indeed shot down earlier this year on, was it February 4th, after it had completely crossed the state of Alaska, British Columbia and Canada, and the northern part of the central United States and some of the southern states as well. And it was in the North American airspace for about a week from January 28th to February 4th. And it was tracked by NORAD the entire time. And the government of China, of course, condemned this. They claimed, and still do, that it was a meteorological balloon that was meant to carry out atmospheric measurements at a high altitude. The National Security Council, however, says otherwise, that it had equipment meant to do surveillance, such as visible and infrared imaging cameras, our RF sensors, digital telemetry, and computer software to help map the locations of strategic installations. But recently, I seen a video somewhere, I believe it came across my Facebook feed, showing a zoom in on the spy balloon's camera surveillance system. So there just might be something to that statement by the NSC, the National Security Council. Now, it should also be noted that President Xi, what is the name of the Chinese president anyway?
President Xi.
Yeah, so, I mean, he accused the U.S. of sending similar type of balloons into Chinese airspace as well.
Right, and that was something that Secretary of State Anthony Blinken outwardly denied in his press briefing on February 13th. And this is not the first time that, you know, spy balloons have been used by countries. And in fact, the history of military reconnaissance balloons goes back some 200 years, all the way back to the time of the French Revolution. But it seems that this one was unusual in that it made an incursion into U.S. airspace. Most of the time, they don't venture beyond national boundaries, but instead stay over oceans that are not within any territorial zones. Now, of course, this cannot be confirmed. And actually, the New York Times reported on February 9th that similar balloon incursions have been going on for several years now. As far as how high up in the sky a country claims as its protected airspace, that varies. There is no international agreement. From country to country, they may determine how high up they call, you know, their airspace and their territorial protection zone. The United States recognizes 12 miles up, which is right about where the balloon was flying.
Yeah, now it was after this that the three unidentified objects were subsequently shot down by U.S. and Royal Canadian Air Force F-22 fighters. The first one was over Alaska and was described as being about the size of a small car. And it was first detected on February 9th and was traveling toward the North Pole. The second one was on February 11th, and it was shot down over the Yukon province up in Canada. And this object was cylindrical in shape and was supposedly smaller than the spy balloon, which was actually relatively large. It was the size of about three buses. So it's unknown exactly how much smaller this one was, but it could be that it was as big as two buses. Anyway, it was still reported as unidentified. And then the third was found on February 12th over Lake Huron in Michigan, traveling at about 20,000 feet, and was described as octagonal in shape as well. And what's interesting is that the search for the wreckages of these objects was called off due to, you know, the rugged terrain and weather conditions. I mean, come on, right? Like with the aerial imaging technology we have now, we can't access the locations of three separate shoot downs. I mean, we found downed aircraft in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars by the hundreds. I don't know, but I think there is something fishy going on with that excuse. And also consider the descriptions of the three objects that were shot down. So the first was the size of a small car. The second was cylindrically shaped, and the other is said to have been smaller than the spy balloon. So the third was octagonally shaped with no size dimensions given. And these are typical descriptions of almost all modern day UFOs. If they are said to not be of alien origin, then who or what are they, and where are they from? Just because the government tells the public that no alien life was shut down doesn't mean that they are telling the truth, right? Like, why haven't they yet gone to recover these mysterious craft? I mean, I just checked Google this past Wednesday to see if there, you know, have been recoveries, and all I find are the news stories of the shootdowns that, you know, are dated back to last month in February. So there's no new development at all. So something is not right here.
Yeah, it's like the media has moved on, like they do with a lot of other current events. So nothing significant about those objects has surfaced, at least as of this time. And thus it would appear that they are, you know, nothing, as what the, you know, the Biden administration is trying to say. And that could be what we are meant to think. Like you said, they're not going to tell us if it is alien or not. They're saying it's not an adversarial country. That could be untrue as well. I don't know. They're coming out and declaring them as unidentified. So that means that they actually do know what the objects really are, that they're not that special. They're saying they're unidentified. They're saying that they're not a big deal. That could be sort of a contradiction. It's hard to say. Or are they trying to sweep the whole thing under the rug? If the objects really were extraterrestrial in origin, we all know the government officials would be backpedaling like crazy. That is, if the press was asking tougher questions, which they seem not to be. So we really don't have no idea. It's kind of confusing. And it's, you know, most of us know that whatever they're telling us in these briefings, it's maybe partially true, and that there's still some things that they are not admitting to. And that's been part of the history of public relations with the U.S. government for a very long time. And really all the information that we have about the whole thing seems to be like it is conforming to some special kind of narrative, and that might be to serve as propaganda, both to the American public and to the leaders of the world. So very hard to say what those objects really were. There are some sources that have even suggested they were probably balloons sent aloft by hobbyists, which is the story carried by the Wall Street Journal, dated February 22nd. And according to Connecticut Congressman Jim Himes of the Health Intelligence Committee, in his interview with National Public Radio, dated February 14th, the objects shot down were possibly part of residual experiments, whatever that means, residual experiments that could have been done by anyone, and that they are not a threat to national security. On the other hand, the website space.com put out just on March 22nd, it says that Air Force General Glenn Van Herk of U.S. Northern Command, NORTHCOM, refused to rule them out as being extraterrestrial in origin. So, as usual, no one's on the same page with their public statements. See, I mean, it's like all over the place.
Wow. So the Air Force General in charge of the U.S. Northern Command refused to rule them out as extraterrestrial. I mean, where's the follow-up on this statement?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if these unidentified objects, say for the sake of argument, are not extraterrestrial, so we want to look at how this phenomena still affects today as a society, just as it has for 80 years now, by going back to the events that started it all. Of course, the most prominent one that being, or that everyone knows about, is Roswell. And we all know this story well, so we won't go into the details about it today. If you haven't already, you can listen to the full episode we did on that some time ago. But ever since the Roswell incident, the government became very secretive about what information was put out to the public in reference to these otherworldly sightings. And they made up stories to cover up what these objects really were, most likely because of the fear of mass hysteria and the disruption of Western civilization's way of life. It's anybody's guess, right? Anyway, there have been thousands of reported sightings since 1947, and they still continue to this day without sensible explanations for many of them. So the whole spy balloon incident makes me think of Project Mogul, which we brought up a while back in our episode on the Roswell crash as well. And that was an early detection system in which helium balloons were used to carry specialized sensor equipment all the way up to the atmosphere or to the stratosphere. And the purpose of this was to monitor nuclear testing by the Soviet Union in eastern Siberia. And that program was declassified in the 1970s and was found via the Freedom of Information Act requests by investigators like Carl Flock and Mark Friedler, to reveal that the military was more concerned over disclosing evidence related to that than they were about hiding anything about the possible crash of a UFO. So there was even a connection back then between a weather balloon narrative and a UFO narrative, just as there is today with the Chinese spy balloon incident. A weather balloon, according to Beijing, and the shooting down of the three unidentified objects.
I know there is a sort of a symmetry with the accounts given. Balloons, whether for intel or weather, they are often mistaken for unidentified objects. Yet by the same token, reports of unidentified objects are often dismissed by the military as being nothing more than balloons. Remember, the wreckage at Roswell was said to be the debris from one of the Mogul balloons launched from Alamogordo Army Airfield in that report done later by the Air Force in the Roswell report. And Alamogordo Airfield is about 100 miles to the west of Roswell. So sometimes the evidence supports the claim that people mistake balloons for UFOs. Other times it does not. And I recall reading that DOD Roswell report that came out. It was in 1997. I was still in the Air Force at the time. It's available to be read from www.af.mil/the Roswell report. And the dissemination about the weather balloon story was meant to conceal the details about Project Mogul. And basically the hysteria with the UFO went by the government to help with the Cold War propaganda, much like today. And the media didn't push back on the official narrative. And for the most part, not much was ever said again, sort of in the same way as the three recently downed objects. Of course, as we pointed out a few episodes ago, you know, Roswell was not actually the first UFO story to be reported by witnesses and then to be covered up by the U.S. government. Remember, there was the Trinity incident, and that occurred in 1945, 2 years before Roswell, and in which there was a crash of an avocado-shaped craft, similar to Roswell, but not exactly. And there were these two alien beings who were seen exiting it. Now, this story was covered it wasn't covered until much recently, and it was not covered until really just a few years ago, when French astrophysicist Jacques Vallée and Italian journalist Paola Harris began interviewing the two men who witnessed the incident when they were still young boys. Vallée actually worked with Alan Hynek, back in the 1960s. Hynek is the guy who came up with the classifications of close encounters, you know, first kind, second kind. So he became very interested in the account of the Trinity UFO case after looking more into the background of it. And he managed to track down the two men who are named Jose Padilla and Remy Baca.
Yeah, and just recently, he and Harris published a book about it titled Trinity, the Best Kept Secret. And it covers their 2003 interviews with Padilla and Baca, much older guys in their 70s at the time, but who claimed to have seen the crash on August 15th, 1945, but it was near San Antonio, New Mexico, not Texas, and that they actually watched the Army remove what they called, as you said, the avocado-shaped object. Now, even more disconcerting was that they saw two alien figures inside of it that supposedly resembled praying mantises, and that they could, you know, be seen through openings. And Padilla and Baca, who then were small boys, became terrified and ran to tell their father, who in turn called the state police, who didn't get there until 2 days later, and then it was gone, since the Army had already moved in and had taken it out. So as it is, the place where they saw this was right in the same area as the atomic bomb testing that was going on with the Manhattan Project. In fact, the name of the incident, Trinity, comes from the military code word for the nuclear detonation that occurred just about a month prior to the UFO crash. So it makes sense that given the entire classified nature of all that was going on there, the Army was going through everything imaginable to keep information about this incident from getting out.
It seems that they succeeded, much more so than with Roswell. And it seems odd that Padilla and Baca waited so long to, you know, to go to the media about this. Like you said, it wasn't until, I think, 2003. But it fits well with the lore of how the government has been said to coerce people into changing their minds about what they said they saw. Such that they themselves no longer believe what they saw, you know, the whole Men in Black paradigm that we've heard about. And when you consider that, it really is no surprise that the news outlets aren't saying anything more about the recovery efforts to find those down objects from last month. Strangely, not only is there often a symmetry of accounts between UFOs and balloons, but also with the locations of nuclear facilities and nuclear testing.
Yeah, and of course we know that with both of those types of cases, the spy balloons and nuclear weapons, secrecy is paramount. So the government is able to enforce a concealment of things, a cover-up, that being for the purpose of national security, right? But it seems that they sometimes have a harder time explaining things away. Then take the 1952 light formations over Washington, D.C. This one was seen by a lot of people, and it made the front pages of nation's major newspapers. So the government could not easily brush it under the rug. It happened back on July 19, 1952. And I'm sure a lot of you know about this one, but this is where multiple Foo Fighter type balls of light were seen overhead of the American Capitol. And they were also detected on radar at Washington National Airport and Andrews Air Force Base. It all began with an air traffic controller seeing a bunch of these fast-moving objects on the radar screen. And this was strange because there were no scheduled flights or flight plans at the time. And at the same time this was going on, witnesses on the ground were calling in and reporting that there were fast-moving lights hovering over the White House, Capitol Hill, and the Washington Monument. Before the Air Force fighter jets could scramble and get there, the objects disappeared, but would return after the planes had landed at their base. So this seemed to be proof that they were under some kind of intelligent control. Now, the whole event went on, four times in as many days, like July 19th and the 20th, and then again on July 26th and the 27th, two separate weekends. So the explanation about them being birds or balloons or meteors didn't hold any water. Now, according to a blog on Gaia.com, dated January 22nd, 2020, the controllers at Washington National Airport said that they were unidentified aircraft zipping around over Washington, D.C. for hours, and our detection and interdiction technology at the time could not keep up. Of course, it went all the way to then President Truman, who gave a press conference about it. In the meantime, the cover story they used was that it was temperature inversions. But at the same time and behind the scenes, the Air Force was creating Project Blue Book. Now, it should also be noted that the CIA also became involved. However, their purpose was not to find the truth. Instead, the goal was to find out how to manage the public's perception. And this was this is when they came up with the Robertson panel and the debunking program. In fact, a government memo at the time showed that the CIA was watching over investigations. And the memo said, no indication of CIA interest or concern is to reach the press or the public in view of their probable alarmist tendencies to accept such interest as confirmatory of the soundness of unpublished facts in the hands of the U.S. government.
Yeah, well, if you remember, the whole decade of the 1950s was a time when the United States UFO policy really began to solidify into what it would be throughout the Cold War years and beyond. Secrecy, to include denial and deception, was at the core of it. This was a time period when Majestic 12 was believed to have been established. So a lot of clandestine agents were at work at this time. And now the Robertson panel, interestingly enough, sort of laid out the problem of our vulnerability to unidentified flying objects and our inadequacy at neutralizing any threat that they may pose. It convened about 6 months after the sightings over Washington, D.C., and was meant to serve as an advisory committee for Project Blue Book. The report on it went to the CIA and indicated that the UFOs, while not a direct threat, could be a direct threat, or I should say, may be an indirect threat by overwhelming the military's resources for providing public information. And it recommended that propaganda campaigns be utilized to dissuade any interest that the American people may have about UFOs, as well as to monitor any civilian groups that would be trying to investigate UFOs on their own. But the real concern seemed to be the advantage of psychological warfare that the Russians might have. That seemed to be sort of central to this memo and really the whole idea of why the CIA was, you know, briefed on any of this. And in that, in all these reports of sightings, they were afraid that it could overload the air defense systems and thus give the enemy the capability to deliver an attack at a time when, you know, our surveillance and reconnaissance measures were trying to distinguish unidentified objects from actual missiles or airplanes. And we can see that the government seemed to be, you know, posturing in a similar way with what had just recently happened, just recently, back in February, with the Chinese spy balloon and the other objects. So political propaganda, you know, was very prevalent in the 1950s, so as to make the Soviet government think that we might possess superior technology that came from extraterrestrials. And part of that ploy was to deny it on the surface to everyone. After all, when you're playing poker, if someone asks you if you have a full house or a royal flush, you don't tell them, yeah, I do. No, you make them wonder and fret that you might have that hand.
Yeah, yep, the old poker face. So we must also remember that the CIA was established in 1947, only 2 months after Roswell. And they say it was created to spy on the Soviet Union, but many believe that they were created to spy on the American public as well. And I personally believe that they were looking to be more involved with the growing UFO phenomena by having a cover-up reason to exist. But their involvement was more to debunk what was witnessed and then educate, quote-unquote, them. That way, people will become discouraged and not, you know, report future UFO sightings. And this further contributed to the whole essence of secrecy. You want the enemy to be afraid of what they think you might have, even though it's not confirmed.
Yeah, it's almost something right out of The Art of War by Sun Tzu. By exploiting what the enemy fears by making them believe you might have it, even if it's not confirmed, so as to always keep them wondering, keep them on their toes, always, you know, never show your poker hand. And that was actually documented by Gerald K. Haynes, where he talks about the CIA's role in the UFO program that went back to 1947, where it appears that part of the mission was to manipulate a narrative to the American public, as well as the international community, almost like through indoctrination, by tailoring that information that was given out by political institutions, as well as academia and the media. And the purpose was to strip away the fascinating and enthralling perception that people had about the flying saucer phenomena. And it was done on a mass scale. And, I brought up the men in black. Some people believe that they may or have been CIA operatives who refused to give any clues to their own identification. And this was a sort of try to depopularize the UFO phenomena as a cultural popularity. Although it didn't seem to work. It seems like the interest in UFOs have not slowed down at all since the time of Roswell.
Yeah, and that could be with the men in black. One thing to take note of here is that after World War II, the American people had a tremendous sense of pride and confidence in the U.S. military and placed it and its leadership up on a pedestal, so to speak. It was an institution that was held in very high esteem, as authors Thomas J. Carey and Donald R. Smith put it in their book, Roswell, The Ultimate Cold Case. Very good book, by the way. And how this was short-lived, because since the Roswell crash, the government was in a panic at first, thinking that the saucer was some type of advanced Soviet technology. But once this was determined to not be the case, the U.S. military had to move fast to kill the UFO story, which led to them resorting to questionable tactics, including appeals to patriotism, a protection of the country's security, bribery, threats of going to prison, and even death threats. And this led to the military having to put out an explanation so ridiculous that everyone in the press would feel stupid believing the crash was a flying saucer. It so happened that the military was still on its high pedestal for winning the war, and so the American people believed and soaked up every word they said as being the truth. Didn't even question it. And this tactic worked perfectly because the press immediately dropped the story, which in turn caused the media to no longer follow up on the story as well. And this is why we have the mindset to not believe those who claim to have seen UFOs or have been abducted and label them as the nutcases. And it's been like this since 1947 until now.
Yeah, and when, you know, Project Blue Book was up and running, you know, many official explanations were put forth for what witnesses claim to have seen. And this is where any, you know, to get the ideas and stories of any strange lights that were said to have been seen, that they were actually really a star or a meteor or the planet Venus or even the moon. Any disc that was said to have been seen was alleged to be a weather balloon or a cloud or bog gas or an ordinary airplane, even though they were said to not maneuver like an ordinary airplane, they would say, no, it really did maneuver like an airplane. You don't know what you're talking about. And they certainly did take the general public to be gullible. And for the most part, you know, many people did accept at face value what they were saying and trying to explain away what were supposedly these unknown, unidentified aerial phenomena. Now, this was not only so as to play mind games with the Soviets and other enemy regimes, but also to safeguard a real fear that our own government had, and that is that our air defense systems were very vulnerable and incapable of dealing with any threat posed by, you know, their reconnaissance, let alone any of their attacks.
Yeah, so anything that looked like a balloon was just, it was simply a balloon. So the Chinese spy balloon was not a UFO because it was identified. It was an identified object. And we had every reason to shoot it down. It was over our airspace, for crying out loud. So, I mean, I don't know why the Chinese government became so upset when it was shut down, because if this was reversed and the Chinese had witnessed an American spy balloon over China, I don't think they would have hesitated to take it out.
Nope.
And when asked if the U.S. had regrets in shooting down the UFOs, a spokesman for the National Security Council said, absolutely not. In fact, President Biden stands firm on saying that, you know, we did not shoot down alien life, by the way. This was from an article by Monica Potts with 38.com, and it was dated February 17th of this year. And in it, she also mentions that a Gallup poll from back in 2021 showed that 41% of Americans believe that some UFOs are a truly alien spacecraft, which is up 8 points from a poll taken a few years prior to that. Another poll found that 3/4 of Americans believe that some sort of life form does exist on other worlds, with 68% thinking that the government is withholding information about it from the public. So, you know, you can only withhold the truth or lie to the people only for so long, because the truth will eventually get out. In other words, the government messed up. The CIA messed up. In fact, the tables are now being turned to where those who ridicule people for believing in UFOs and aliens are now becoming the ones who are being looked at strangely, because their belief that, you know, nothing else exists out there in the cosmos now seems to be naive to a lot of folks, given the day and age we live in with, you know, such advancements in science and technology.
Yeah, and you know, you also have to wonder about the tie-in with this to the Tic Tac UFO. We've talked about the Tic Tac UFO because this is sort of what really got the discussions going in recent years, and we did an entire episode on it just last year. However, you know, there was another incident which I believe is noteworthy because the object seen in this incident was said to have maneuvered in a way that was similar to that of the Tic Tac. And that was shown on that in a famous military clear footage that we've all seen from, I think, back 2004. There's another one, like in 2015 with the gimbal object. This one happened in 1955, where an Oklahoma Highway Patrol officer reported that four objects had descended quite quickly from 22,000 feet to 4,000 feet in just a few seconds. Supposedly, it was also tracked on radar at nearby Tinker Air Force Base. So the G-force from a rapid descent is like that is impossible for any human to withstand, and not to mention the stresses that would be put upon the aircraft structure from the inertia and the momentum. They're not designed for force vectors from that kind of motion. The same is what we see in a Tic Tac and drop from, they say, like 80,000 feet and stop on a dime in just a matter of seconds right above the Pacific Ocean. So, yes, this kind of aviation technology, quite frankly, defies the known laws of physics.
Yeah, and it's strange that the government decided to release the videos of the Tic Tac and comment on them in a press conference. I think they know something and are now preparing us for what's to come. I think we are going to start seeing a lot more unexplained aerial phenomena in the coming decade or two, which will be a no-brainer that, you know, we are not alone.
And I think, you know, the question on everyone's mind, of course, with the appearance of any mysterious object or craft that is seen in the sky, is do the occupants come in peace? A valid question. An alien invasion, as depicted in every sci-fi story and movie involves us being overwhelmed by their superior technology. They're able to do things that we can't by the very fact that they had traveled across an ocean of stars to come here. So when we encounter them and their spacecraft and, you know, their gadgets and devices and abilities, we know right away that we're dealing with a species that is much more advanced than us.
Yeah, I would guess that there are civilizations out there that are indeed more advanced than we are. If we exist, then what makes you think no other life form does it? I believe the major governments of the world probably do know of other civilizations, you know? So you wonder why they just don't say, hey, we are not alone in the universe.
Well, that's probably way more transparency than they want for the UFO program, at least at this time.
Yeah, well, I mean, they pretty much did disclose that we are not alone because of those Navy FLIR system videos of the Tic Tac and the Gimbal, as you just mentioned. And the Pentagon has said they cannot rule out that those are not vehicles from beyond our Earth. So the Pentagon said that. And that is what astrophysicist Eric Davis, a program consultant for the UAP task force, had told the New York Times about his classified briefing with the Department of Defense back in March of 2020. So full disclosure would be a straight up statement. Intelligent alien life exists on a planet called so-and-so, and we've been visited from time to time by extraterrestrials throughout our history. That would be full disclosure. Now, wouldn't you think so? And that definitely raises some real concern for everybody, everywhere, because we're basically just sitting ducks if they come here and turn out to be hostile.
Right. And you know, some science fiction authors have definitely used their imaginations to conjure up such a notion. Others paint a different picture of alien contact. Some of them paint them as, you know, picture of them coming more peacefully. You know, writer Alan Dean Foster has expounded on how life forms across the universe, after becoming so much more advanced and so much more evolved than us, that they no longer have the need to engage in violent conflict, almost like they're virtually incapable of it. They sort of outgrow it. Gene Roddenberry sort of believed a similar thing, and it was seen to have been carried over into the Star Trek series with the Prime Directive that they talked about, and the whole United Federation of Planets being like a sort of guardian of peace in the galaxy. I guess you can say that we hope so. We hope that is the case. Arthur C. Clarke wrote on a similar theme in a book called Childhood's End, a highly developed technological civilization that is, by definition, nonviolent. That is a nice notion to ponder, and it was even thrown out in that 1990s movie, you know, called Mars Attacks. And it was a bit of a fallacy, as there are plenty of cases in history in which groups of people on the cutting edge of technology are actually quite warlike and imperialistic. You know, the Roman Empire was state of the art during its apex in terms of technology and innovation, and they conquered other people with brutality. The Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Chinese, it was like that with all of them. Certainly the British Empire was big on military expansion as well.
Yeah, and when you think about it, nearly every advanced civilization has always been to command and conquer. It's evolution at its finest, survival of the fittest, right? The strongest and more equipped wins. I mean, we discussed many times on our podcast about the ancient alien theory, where we've shown the connection of the biblical God and others to be very hostile. Yahweh gave many commands to Joshua to go forth and take control of neighboring tribes by slaughtering everyone, which this included women, children, the elderly, and even livestock. And some of the descriptions tell of the death tolls being into the very thousands and tens of thousands. And we said before that this should not be the doings of a benevolent deity, but it makes perfect sense that an extraterrestrial tyrant would give such orders. Just look at the Middle Ages. It's loaded with accounts of people with better inventions like gunpowder and battering rams, not arriving in the name of peace. Our histories are full of it in every part of the world. Now, granted, we are talking about humans here. So, I mean, you can say, well, maybe aliens aren't like us in that way. Well, maybe they are truly not warlusting.
Yeah, but is there a chance that of that? In the very least, there is a chance that they do not have our best interests in mind, even if they're not exactly war-lusting. They just simply don't care about our best interests. It's hard to say. Although when we learn about, you know, the stories and legends of people having encounters with powerful sky beings, whether they are abductions by greys, reptilians, or ancient, you know, literary descriptions of the gods. And there's certainly a constituent of terror that is always involved. It never seems to be like they're all happy. So you have to wonder why that is. And there are plenty of writers, you know, Robert Heinlein, Arthur Toft, H.G. Wells, Isaac Asimov, who saw first contact as being an attempt by extraterrestrials to actually exterminate us. And there's actually a ton of literature about that very idea.
Oh, yeah, and a ton of movies as well. War Worlds, Independence Day, V, Battlestar Galactica, et cetera. However, there very well may be an advanced civilization out there that is very benevolent and, you know, want nothing more than to communicate and share with us their thousands of years of knowledge. And we brought that up a few months ago when we discussed the Pleiadians. And the mythological traditions tied in with their characteristics of goodwill. And that would be the ideal contact scenario, of course. However, our imaginations are abundant with the idea that they could come here to conquer and subjugate the human race. Like you said, we have a lot of books and movies that delve into that.
Yeah, so, Laurie, we have to ask the question, are we prepared for something like that? Are we truly ready for, you know, first contact with alien life? And just to be clear, contact doesn't necessarily have to be their arrival here on Earth. It could simply be the reception of a radio signal that contains a message. And it is just the hard evidence that there are intelligent beings out there or which there is no longer any reasonable doubt. But we are, the human race, are we truly prepared? And if we're not, and I don't think we are, then the question is as to the vulnerability of our airspace to incoming extraterrestrial ships. And that is an unsettling one. And even if they do come in peace, we can expect their arrival to be disruptive. I mean, something as simple as first contact with alien intelligence over, you know, radio signal that is intercepted, and their existence, you know, maybe thousands of light years away. Will psychologically impact us and how we interact with one another. Some people will deny it is happening altogether. Some people will say it is the Lord. Some people will want to fight, and others will see it as the natural order of things and simply resign to fate.
Yeah. Well, whether or not we're ready for first contact is irrelevant. I sound like the Borg from Star Trek.
Yeah, you do.
Resistance is futile. If it is going to happen, it is going to happen regardless of readiness or our airspace defenses. We are no more politically, socially, or mentally set for it than were the people of Pompeii when Mount Vesuvius erupted in 79 AD. Even if there are warning signs and deductive clues, humans tend not to prepare very well for cataclysmic changes, but we do adapt. And as we said before, it may not be a question of if we're ready, but how we cope and survive when it does occur.
And perhaps we do need to use the terms first contact rather loosely, since it may not actually be our first contact. It may just be for us in that way in this modern era. But it may not be the first time for the human race. As for us being ready for it, well, the fact that there are and always have been so many people of faith throughout the world may mean very well that on some psychological level, we've always have been ready. And that will wrap it up for today. We hope you all enjoyed the show. And on our next episode, that will be the weekend of Easter. And we'll touch on the subject of that which we discussed before. And that is immortality. Nobody knows for sure about it. It has not been proven, but almost everyone affirms the belief in it through their own personal faith. And for Christians, Easter Sunday is the tangible symbol of that faith in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So we'll explore why the very idea of eternal life pervades our cultures the way it does, and if it is truly is possible that our existence continues in an afterlife.
Yeah, so could our minds be like some software that is stored in the cloud, the memory accessible through the internet with, you know, any computer that is connected, even if the computer uploaded the software no longer exists? So could this be what is meant by us having a conscience? And I know that you explained that pretty well in that episode we talked about that on. But we're going to elaborate more on that and a lot more in the next episode.
Yeah, and this can actually be demonstrated today, you know, with our technology of cloud computing. The programs and data that were uploaded a long time ago, they still exist out there in cyberspace. And with no changes, even if the devices that put them there and uploaded them to the cloud are no longer functional and may actually have been destroyed. So that should be a very stimulating, inspiring, and fascinating subject. So please join us again next time here on Alien Talk Podcast. We look forward to being with you again. As always, folks, stay curious.
Yeah, and if you haven't already, please check out our new website, www.aliantalkpodcast.com. And we put out our monthly newsletters there, and we'll be getting April's up real soon. Also, thank you all for all the supportive posts that we've received on Facebook. We sure do appreciate that. There were some really good comments. So don't forget, you guys make this podcast possible. So take care, everyone.